Love street style? Check out our online exclusive Slug Style feature. We profile community members with some serious flair and panache, only on slugmag.com.
Shh! Are you listening? This is Slug Soundwaves. Hello! My name is Nick. People call me Skunk. I come from a band called Scary Uncle Steve. Until recently, we were a four-piece band that consisted of me on guitar, Nate Shackelford played the accordion, Jesse Struggle plays the bass, Dave Motee plays the drums. We all collectively sing, but me and Nate do most of the singing. We've been called a folk punk band, I think wrongly, because we have an accordion and we're a punk band, but I don't think that fits, because I feel like folk punk bands tend to be more topical. They're more politically charged than we tend to be. We don't necessarily shy away from talking about politics, but we don't write just about politics. Folk punk tends to be more like working class and rise up for the workers and stuff, which is cool, but we don't do that. We're more, we rise up from our bed and, you know, have a beer. Like, that's what we're more about. So I was in a band called Desolate with Nate and Dave. I played guitar. It was five people, but I played guitar in that band. Nate played the bass, and Dave played the drums. You know, we talked about it a little. There's only four drummers in Salt Lake, and so they're in, 18 bands apiece. And that was one of them that Dave was in. But we were like really heavy, like thrashy punk, like really kind of crusty, and it was one of those bands that, when we would play a show, if it wasn't people there that knew what we were or were into that kind of shit, the second we started playing, within the first half of a song, they would be out the door. They wanted no part of it. So, and I mean, that's all fun and good, but we kind of hit a point where we wanted to play good music. We wanted to play music that was like digestible for somebody walking in for the first time. And it was right around that time that me and Nate had started to like branch into, well, like listening wise, we would listen to like more like folky punk bands. We started to find bands like Mischief Brew and The Taxpayers, and rather than just be really pissed off, they actually had something, you know, to say, and they were writing like pretty melodies, and it was something we wanted to do, like rather than just get up there and go ape shit for 45 minutes, you know. Like on the side, me and Nate started trying to like jam acoustic songs, and it started with Nate playing the accordion and me playing an acoustic guitar, and we were just writing songs like just the two of us. And after a while, we kind of hit the point where we were like, well, we should probably get a drummer. And of course it was Dave, because once again, there's only four drummers in Salt Lake. We just kind of told him like, you're gonna have to be in this band. And then when we told him like, well, it's not really fast, he was like, oh yeah, I can do that. As soon as we got him playing with us, we kind of hit the point where we were like, well, we sort of need a bass. I don't know, it's starting to feel more like a whole band rather than just two dudes playing acoustic or three dudes playing acoustic. So I already kind of had made up my mind that we should get Jesse involved, because Jesse comes from like street punk bands, and he's like very versed in just playing shows and doing music, and like, you know, he's really into doing that stuff. And but like at the same time, I knew he was like completely opposed to playing like pretty music, as he would call it. So to combat that, like I asked him about 100 times, and he was like, no, I'm not playing in your stupid band. And then finally, like me and Nate went over there one night with a case of beer, and we played Mischief Brew at him for like 3 hours, and just drank beer with him until, I don't know if it was because he was hammered or we finally got through to him, but he was like, all right, I'll do it. This is cool. Like, he was really into that band, and we were like, we want to play kind of like this. That's pretty much where the lineup came from. Okay, so the name Scary Uncle Steve actually was a joke from an old band that I was in's interview for a localized. So there was a band called Dubbed that I was in, and we were doing our localized interview, and somehow we got talking about, oh, once we're old and retired and, you know, we're not doing this anymore, but Mike the bass started talking about, well, in Skunk's next band, Scary Uncle, and I'll never forget, like, he said that, and I just kind of plugged it into my database, like, I was like, that'd be a really good name for a band, and so I just kind of, like, scratched it onto my brain. It's like, I'm going to start a band one day called Scary Uncle. And for the longest time, it was just Scary Uncle. And then when me and Nate finally started dicking around acoustically and sort of forming the band, I was like, we should call it Scary Uncle. And then I was like, wait, no, we should call it Scary Uncle Steve. And he just kind of stared at me like, why? I was like, because everybody's got an Uncle Steve, right? And he starts to think about it. He's like, yeah, I think I maybe have an Uncle Steve. I'm like, I know I have an Uncle Steve. Everybody's got an Uncle Steve. We're all kind of older, so we got to the point where we were, rather than just write songs all day, we wanted to cover songs here and there. And so we're all like old music, because we're old or anything, but like, you know, it can't all just be punk rock and studs and leather and crap. So we were looking to bands like, we covered Dexy's Midnight Runner, you know, we did Come On Eileen. We really liked doing that because the idea to me of taking like an old song and adding an accordion where the lead guitar was always like really fun to me. So that led to, we got asked to play a Halloween show, and it was the idea of the punk rock Halloween shows are, you know, you pick a band and you play a whole set as that band. And everybody picked punk bands, and we were like, we should be the Cars. So we did a whole set of the Cars, and it was rather interesting because, you know, you listen to those songs and they sound very simple, but when you try and get into the meat and potatoes of those songs are hard as fuck, and there is a lot going on, so we really, like, hunkered down and tried as hard as we could to make it sound really good, and I think we did a pretty good job, like, taking keyboards and lead guitars and translating them to accordion, and that kind of goes... That just speaks volumes for Nate as an accordion player. But then eventually that led us to the idea of, well, what if every once in a while, just randomly, maybe twice a year, we would show up to a show that we were booked on, like just any random show too. It could just be a local show at the Underground where there's going to be like five people. And we would show up and we would play verbatim an entire... like album that we were super into. The first idea that we had was to do David Bowie's Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust, and the whole idea of it to us was like, we would show up, we wouldn't say a fucking word about it, we would just be like, we're Scary Uncle Steve, and we would play this whole record verbatim, and some people might not even notice, you know. I'm sure, like, with that record, by the time we got to Lady Stardust, people, or like, you know, certain songs on there, they'd be like, oh, they're doing David Bowie. But, you know, the first couple songs on there, people would be like, oh, these guys are different, you know, or whatever. But anyway, like, the thought was we would do that, and then we would never play that again. We wouldn't say anything about it. We wouldn't tell people when we were going to do these shows. So the idea was, like, hopefully the word would spread that sometimes when you go see Scary Uncle Steve, they pull this thing out of left field. Like, the other one we were going to do was Seasons in the Abyss by Slayer, so it wasn't just limited to like 80s stuff or, you know, or even a genre, like, and I mean, because think how cool it'd be to hear Kerry King guitar solos on an accordion, just like, woo-woo-woo-woo. So anyway, we kind of never got to do that because we got the news that Nate was moving to Canada, and we were kind of under the gun time wise it was like, we were about halfway done learning Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust when we kind of got that news. So we kind of knew it was coming, but once the final nail was in the coffin that he was definitely moving, we just decided, well, it's either we finish learning this album for fun or we go record and release our full-length album. And, I mean, obviously we had to pick recording and releasing a full-length album. So, we found out Nate was moving to Canada, and, you know, we busted ass and recorded this record, and then we played this awesome show, and then he was gone. We kind of just had to pick up the pieces from there, and at first it left us in this weird limbo where we almost didn't want to go practice. We didn't want to break up, but we didn't want to... It sounds really shitty, like, he didn't die, but... So we were trying to figure out how to move on from that, and what we kind of landed on is Nate started looking really heavily into, you know, bands that'll practice over the internet. One of them will write a song and then send it to another one, and they do that kind of shit. There's a program called Jam Kazam where you can practice over the internet. You have to have, like, an audio interface, and, you know, so he bought us these nice audio interfaces, and we're still trying to figure that out. But the idea is that there's no latency and there's no lag, so you don't need to worry about, like, all of a sudden the signal has to buff itself or something, you're going to lose, you know, somebody's going to get all off, you know, you can potentially play live. We kind of came up with some good ideas to move on from that, where maybe we'll play shows with Nate where he's a TV, you know, and... we had a really good idea of, like, making a cardboard cutout. Either making a cardboard cutout of him or using, like, a sexy cardboard cutout and, like, taping a picture of an accordion to it, but then still have the face be, like, a FaceTime Nate. And so, like, and he could just be sitting in his living room in British Columbia in his underwear for all we know, but, like, you know, he's there and he's playing live. I think that'd be hilarious. We haven't really hit the point where we could... dabble in that yet, but I think it'd be awesome because I have a Channing Tatum shirtless Magic Mike cardboard cutout that would be perfect. I mean, it doesn't look anything like Nate, but if it was his face, that would be pretty cool. And I feel like people would go see that band. They're like, you gotta see this band. They have this cardboard FaceTime dude playing the accordion. I think it'd be funny. Our other ideas to move on from that is, like, to sort of not really... move on without him, but I mean, we've hit a point where we have to do something because the songs with just the three of us, they just don't sound full, they don't sound right, they sound really, really naked. So what we've kind of started to lean toward is, rather than replace an accordion player, because they're not just growing on trees, is to, like, we were like, well, we could lean toward a keyboard that would sound similar and be cool for what we're doing, but then it's also not like replacing Nate. It's more like keeping his seat warm, you know, while he's gone. So the idea was initially was that we really, really were looking for a female to play the keyboard that could sing and scream like punk metal-y kind of shit and would want to play with the three of us and do all this. Now, needless to say that person does not exist. We ended up playing a show. We got asked to play. Urban Lounge does these tribute nights, and they asked us, we've kind of gotten good with the Urban Lounge and Metro booking dudes and stuff, and they were like, oh, you guys should totally play this Ramones night. And, I mean, maybe I shouldn't say this, but I hate the fucking Ramones, so I was like, no, I don't want to do it. And Dave and Jesse were like, shit, yeah, we're doing that. I'm like, fuck. All right, so we learned these songs, but, like, my idea was, like, well, I don't like the Ramones, so let's play... I wanted to do them all as a medley, as one big song. And then I was like, and then I took it even further, like, where I was like, my original idea was I wanted to take the songs that we were doing. We didn't want to do popular songs, but then I wanted to do them as a medley and gap the songs with, like, their popular songs, right? So, like, we would end some song that, you know, whatever song, and start going like, hey, ho, let's go, and then break into the next song. And then it evolved even further where I was like, maybe we should just, like, play totally different songs and, you know, we'll go that route. And it led me to, like, oh, we should do Oingo Boingo. Because who doesn't like Oingo Boingo? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't like Oingo Boingo and they're wrong. You know, we landed on Oingo Boingo, but you can't do Oingo Boingo without some kind of, like, it would have been awesome with the accordion, but all I could think was, well, keyboard would be cool. And I started looking at, like, who else is playing the show, you know, because I didn't want to, like, bring somebody down there just to play 30 seconds of an Oingo Boingo song. And I was like, thanks, like, get off the stage, you know. Yeah, so I started looking at what bands are playing, and Wicked Bears were playing too. Nick Fleming from Wicked Bears, I know that he's a very musical dude. So I just kind of hit him up and was like, do you have a keyboard and can you play it? And he goes, no, but I could probably figure it out. Why? And I'm like, well, I was kind of hoping you could learn this part in this Oingo Boingo song, and since you're already playing the show with us, you could come play it. And he was like, oh, of course, I'll get a keyboard. I don't know if he borrowed one or bought one immediately, but he showed up with a really nice keyboard. And then, you know, we practiced a couple of times, and he would kind of sit and dick around on other songs, and we were like, you should just play the whole show with us. And then we played the show, and I don't know if it was before the show or after the show, but Jesse and Dave were just like, you should just be in the band with us. And I feel like I kept giving him the out where I was like, we're crazy, you don't want to be in a band with us. And he's just like, no, I think it'll be okay. And like, lo and behold, now he's playing with us. He's a great addition too, because he's very, like I said, he's very musical. He's very, I feel like he's kind of got the same thing as Nate, where you can hand him something and go, figure this out. And then 3 weeks later, he's really good at it. That's really how he approached the keyboard. We kept telling him, like, we treat the accordion like a lead instrument, so we want you to play a lot of leads. And he's like, okay. And he's just, like he said, he doesn't know how to play the keyboard, but he'll figure it out. And he figured it out. He's doing really good, and it's really cool. So now we're kind of stuck in this limbo where we're trying to figure out how to do the dual vocals, because me and Nate did a lot of like back and forth, where like, you know, a lot of call and response, but even faster, to where like one dude can't do it and make it sound good. I can do it when we practice, just for practice purposes, but I just can't. It's got to be two people, so we're still kind of on the hunt for somebody to fill that role, and that's kind of the limbo we're in right now. What you're about to hear is a cover song that I originally heard done by Louis Armstrong, and it was called Kiss of Fire, and I researched it a little bit more and found out it was done by Georgia Gibbs, it was done by Hugh Laurie, it was done by a shitload of people. There is an original version that's an old Spanish song called El Choclo, and we just thought it was too cool. And I don't feel like we'll ever be able to play it live, so I would like to play it here so people can probably hear it and appreciate it.
You gotta do it, Kathy. This thing is too big.
Of course she's got to do it. She's got a 5-year contract with me. Get over to that microphone, Selden.
You heard of Kathy. Now do it.
Still the flame grows higher. I know I must surrender.
because we're in such a limbo right now, we don't have any shows that we need to plug or anything coming up, but you can find us on Bandcamp. You can buy our music there. You can listen to our music there. You can listen to us on Spotify. You can listen to us on iTunes. You can listen to us on Pandora. You can pay what you want. You can give us money. Listen to us for free. We don't even care. Just listen to us. And if you enjoyed this episode of Slug Soundwaves, please take 60 seconds and rate or review us on iTunes.
Slug's print edition streets the first Friday of every month. Find it any place cool or online. More information available at slugmag.com.